8. Below his wind steed's heavily beating wings, Rokanan saw a slope of broken rock, a slanting chaos of boulders running down behind, tilted up ahead so that the steed's left wingtip almost brushed the rocks as it labored up and forward towards the coal. He wore the battle straps over his thighs, for updrafts and gusts sometimes blew the steeds off balance, and he wore his impermasuit for warmth. Riding behind him, wrapped in all the cloaks and furs the two of them had, Jahan was still so cold that he had strapped his wrists to the saddle, unable to trust his grip. Mogian, riding well ahead on his less burdened steed, bore the cold and altitude much better than Jahan, and met their battle with the heights with a harsh joy. 15 days ago they had left the last Fien village, bidding farewell to Keo, and set out over the foothills and lower ranges for what looked like the widest pass. The Fia could give them no directions. At any mention of crossing the mountains, they had fallen silent, with a cowering look. The first days had gone well. But as they got high up, the wind steeds began to tire quickly, the thinner air not supplying them with the rich oxygen intake they burned while flying. Higher still, they met the cold and the treacherous weather of high altitudes. In the last 3 days, they had covered perhaps 15 kilometers, most of that distance on a blind lead. The men went hungry to give the steeds an extra ration of dried meat. This morning, Rokanan had let them finish what was left in the sack, for if they did not get across the pass today, they would have to drop back down to woodlands where they could hunt and rest and start all over. They seemed now on the right way toward a pass, but from the peaks to the east a terrible thin wind blew, and the sky was getting white and heavy. Still Mogian flew ahead, and Rokanan forced his mount to follow, for in this endless cruel passage of the great heights, Mogian was his leader, and he followed. He had forgotten why he wanted to cross these mountains, remembering only that he had to, that he must go south. But for the courage to do it, he depended on Mogian. "I think this is your domain," he had said to the young man last evening when they had discussed their present course. And looking out over the great cold view of peak and abyss, rock and snow and sky, Mogian had answered with his quick lordly certainty, "This is my domain." He was calling now, and Rokanan tried to encourage his steed, while he peered ahead through frozen lashes, seeking a break in the endless, slanting chaos. There it was, an angle, a jutting roof beam of the planet. The slope of rock fell suddenly away, and under them lay a waste of white, the pass. On either side, wind-scoured peaks reared on up into the thickening snow clouds. Rokanan was close enough to see Mogian's untroubled face and hear his shout, the falsetto battle yell of the victorious warrior. He kept following Mogian over the white valley under the white clouds. Snow began to dance about them, not falling, only dancing here in its habitat, its birthplace, a dry, flickering dance. Half-starved and overladen, the wind steed gasped at each lift and downbeat of its great barred wings. Mogian had dropped back so they would not lose him in the snow clouds, but still kept on, and they followed. There was a glow in the flickering mist of snowflakes, and gradually there dawned a thin, clear radiance of gold. Pale gold, the sheer fields of snow reached downward. Then abruptly the world fell away, and the wind steeds floundered in a vast gulf of air. Far beneath, very far, clear and small, lay valleys, lakes, the glittering tongue of a glacier, green patches of forest. Rokanan's mount floundered and dropped, its wings raised, dropped like a stone, so that Jahan cried out in terror, and Rokanan shut his eyes and held on. The wings beat and thundered, beat again. The falling slowed, became again a laboring glide, and halted. The steed crouched, trembling, in a rocky valley. Nearby, Mogian's gray beast was trying to lie down while Mogian, laughing, jumped off its back and called, "We're over! We did it!" He came up to them, his dark, vivid face bright with triumph. "Now both sides of the mountains are my domain, Rokanan. This will do for our camp tonight. Tomorrow the steeds can hunt farther down where trees grow, and we'll work down on foot. Come, Yahan." Yahan crouched in the postillion saddle, unable to move. Mogian lifted him from the saddle and helped him lie down in the shelter of a jutting boulder. For though the late afternoon sun shone here, it gave little more warmth than did the great star, a tiny crumb of crystal in the southwestern sky. And the wind still blew bitter cold. While Rokanan unharnessed the steeds, the Angiar lord tried to help his servant, doing what he could to get him warm. There was nothing to build a fire with. They were still far above timberline. Rokanan stripped off the impermasuit and made Yahan put it on, ignoring the midman's weak and scared protests, then wrapped himself up in furs. The wind steeds and the men huddled together for mutual warmth and shared a little water and Fian whey bread. Night rose up from the vague lands below. Stars leaped out, released by darkness, and the two brighter moons shone within hand's reach. Deep in the night, Rokanan roused from blank sleep. Everything was starlit, silent, deathly cold. Yahan had hold of his arm and was whispering feverishly, shaking his arm and whispering. Rokanan looked where he pointed and saw standing on the boulder above them a shadow, an interruption in the stars. Like the shadow he and Yahan had seen on the pampas, far back to northward, it was large and strangely vague. Even as he watched it, the stars began to glimmer faintly through the dark shape, and then there was no shadow, only black transparent air. To the left of where it had been, Heliki shone, faint in its waning cycle. "It was a trick of moonlight, Yahan," he whispered. "Go back to sleep. You've got a fever." "No," said Mogian's quiet voice beside him. "It wasn't a trick, Rokanan. It was my death." Yahan sat up, shaking with fever.
"No, Lord, not yours. It couldn't be. I saw it before, on the plains when you weren't with us. So did Olhor."
Summoning to his aid the last shreds of common sense, of scientific moderation, of the old life's rules, Rokanan tried to speak authoritatively.
"Don't be absurd," he said.
Mogian paid no attention to him.
"I saw it on the plains where it was seeking me, and twice in the hills while we sought the pass. Whose death would it be if not mine? Yours, Yahan? Are you a lord, an Angia? Do you wear the second sword?" Sick and despairing, Yahan tried to plead with him, but Mogian went on. "It's not Rokanan's, for he still follows his way. A man can die anywhere, but his own death, his true death, a lord meets only in his domain. It waits for him in the place which is his, a battlefield or a hall or a road's end. And this is my place. From these mountains my people came, and I have come back. My second sword was broken fighting. But listen, my death. I am Hala's heir, Mogian. Do you know me now?"
The thin, frozen wind blew over the rocks. Stones loomed about them, stars glittering out beyond them. One of the wind steeds stirred and snarled. "Be still," Rokanan said. "This is all foolishness. Be still and sleep." But he could not sleep soundly after that. And whenever he roused, he saw Mogian sitting by his steed's great flank, quiet and ready, watching over the night-darkened lands. Come daylight, they let the wind steeds free to hunt in the forests below and started to work their way down on foot. They were still very high, far above timberline, and safe only so long as the weather held clear. But before they had gone an hour, they saw Yahan could not make it. It was not a hard descent, but exposure and exhaustion had taken too much out of him,
and he could not keep walking, let alone scramble and cling as they sometimes must. Another day's rest in the protection of Rokanan's suit might give him the strength to go on. But that would mean another night up here without fire or shelter or enough food. Mogian weighed the risks without seeming to consider them at all, and suggested that Rokanan stay with Yahan on a sheltered and sunny ledge while he sought a descent easy enough that they might carry Yahan down, or failing that, a shelter that might keep off snow. After he had gone, Yahan, lying in a half-stupor, asked for water. Their flask was empty. Rokanan told him to lie still and climbed up the slanting rock face to a boulder-shadowed ledge 15 meters or so above, where he saw some packed snow glittering. The climb was rougher than he had judged, and he lay on the ledge gasping the bright, thin air, his heart going hard. There was a noise in his ears, which at first he took to be the singing of his own blood. Then, near his hand, he saw water running. He sat up. A tiny stream, smoking as it ran, wound along the base of a drift of hard, shadowed snow. He looked for the stream's source and saw a dark gap under the overhanging cliff. A cave. A cave was their best hope of shelter, said his rational mind, but it spoke only on the very fringe of a dark, non-rational rush of feeling, of panic. He sat there unmoving in the grip of the worst fear he had ever known. All about him, the unavailing sunlight shone on gray rock. The mountain peaks were hidden by the nearer cliffs, and the lands below to the south were hidden by unbroken cloud. There was nothing at all here on this bare, gray ridgepole of the world but himself and a dark opening between boulders. After a long time, he got to his feet, went forward, stepping across the steaming rivulet, and spoke to the presence which he knew waited inside that shadowy gap. "I have come," he said. The darkness moved a little, and the dweller in the cave stood at its mouth. It was like the clay folk, dwarfish and pale, like the Fia, frail and clear-eyed, like both, like neither. The hair was white. The voice was no voice, for it sounded within Rokanan's mind, while all his ears heard was the faint whistle of the wind. And there were no words, yet it asked him what he wished. "I do not know," the man said aloud in terror, but his set will answered silently for him. "I will go south and find my enemy and destroy him." The wind blew, whistling. The warm stream chuckled at his feet. Moving slowly and lightly, the dweller in the cave stood aside, and Rokanan, stooping down, entered the dark place. "What do you give for what I have given you? What must I give, Ancient One, that which you hold dearest and would least willingly give? I have nothing of my own on this world. What thing can I give? A thing, a life, a chance, an eye, a hope, a return. The name need not be known, but you will cry its name aloud when it is gone. Do you give it freely? Freely, Ancient One." Silence and the blowing of wind. Rokanan bowed his head and came out of the darkness. As he straightened up, red light struck full in his eyes, a cold red sunrise over a gray and scarlet sea of cloud. Yahan and Mogian slept huddled together on the lower ledge, a heap of furs and cloaks, unstirring as Rokanan climbed down to them. "Wake up," he said softly. Yahan sat up, his face pinched and childish in the hard red dawn.
"Olhor, we thought you were gone. We thought you had fallen."
Mogian shook his yellow-maned head to clear it of sleep and looked up a minute at Rokanan. Then he said hoarsely and gently, "Welcome back, Star-Lord, companion. We waited here for you."
I spoke with...
Mogian raised his hand. "You have come back. I rejoice in your return. Do we go south?"
"Yes,"
Good, said Mogian.
In that moment, it was not strange to Rokanan that Mogian, who for so long had seemed his leader, now spoke to him as a lesser to a greater lord. Mogian blew his whistle. But though they waited long, the wind steeds did not come. They finished the last of the hard, nourishing Fian bread and set off once more on foot. The warmth of the impermasuit had done Yahan good, and Rokanan insisted he keep it on. The young midman needed food and real rest to get his strength back, but he could get on now, and they had to get on. Behind that red sunrise would come heavy weather. It was not dangerous going, but slow and wearisome. Midway in the morning, one of the steeds appeared, Mogian's gray, flitting up from the forests far below. They loaded it with the saddles and harness and furs, all they carried now, and it flew along above or below or beside them as it pleased, sometimes letting out a ringing yowl as if to call its striped mate, still hunting or feasting down in the forests. About noon they came to a hard stretch, a cliff face sticking out like a shield over which they would have to crawl, roped together. From the air you might see a better path for us to follow, Mogian, Rokanan suggested. I wish the other steed would come. He had a sense of urgency. He wanted to be off this bare gray mountainside and be hidden down among trees. The beast was tired out when we let it go. It may not have made a kill yet. This one carried less weight over the pass. I'll see how wide this cliff is. Perhaps my steed can carry all three of us for a few bow shots. He whistled, and the gray steed, with the loyal obedience that still amazed Rokanan and a beast so large and so carnivorous, wheeled around in the air and came looping gracefully up to the cliffside where they waited. Mogian swung up on it and with a shout sailed off, his bright hair catching the last shaft of sunlight that broke through thickening banks of cloud. Still the thin, cold wind blew. Yahan crouched back in an angle of rock, his eyes closed. Rokanan sat looking out into the distance, at the remotest edge of which could be sensed the fading brightness of the sea. He did not scan the immense, vague landscape that came and went between drifting clouds, but gazed at one point, south and a little east, one place. He shut his eyes. He listened and heard. It was a strange gift he had got from the dweller in the cave, the guardian of the warm well in the unnamed mountains. A gift that went all against his grain to ask. There in the dark by the deep warm spring, he had been taught a skill of the senses that his race and the men of Earth had witnessed and studied in other races, but to which they were deaf and blind, save for brief glimpses and rare exceptions. Clinging to his humanity, he had drawn back from the totality of the power that the guardian of the well possessed and offered. He had learned to listen to the minds of one race, one kind of creature among all the voices of all the worlds, one voice, that of his enemy. With Kyo, he had had some beginnings of mind speech, but he did not want to know his companions' minds when they were ignorant of his. Understanding must be mutual, when loyalty was, and love. But those who had killed his friends and broken the bond of peace, he spied upon. He overheard. He sat on the granite spur of a trackless mountain peak and listened to the thoughts of men in buildings among rolling hills thousands of meters below and 100 kilometers away. A dim chatter, a buzz and babble and confusion, a remote roil and storming of sensations and emotions. He did not know how to select voice from voice, and was dizzy among 100 different places and positions. He listened as a young infant listens, undiscriminating. Those born with eyes and ears must learn to see and hear, to pick out a face from a double eyeful of upside-down world, to select meaning from a welter of noise. The guardian of the well had the gift which Rokanan had only heard rumor of on one other planet, of unsealing the telepathic sense. And he had taught Rokanan how to limit and direct it. But there had been no time to learn its use, its practice. Rokanan's head spun with the impingement of alien thoughts and feelings. 1,000 strangers crowded in his skull. No words came through. Mind-hearing was the word the Angiar, the outsiders, used for the sense. What he heard was not speech, but intentions, desires, emotions, the physical locations and sensual mental directions of many different men jumbling and overlapping through his own nervous system, terrible gusts of fear and jealousy, drifts of contentment, abysses of sleep, a wild, racking vertigo of half-understanding, half-sensation. And all at once, out of the chaos, something stood absolutely clear. A contact, more definite than a hand laid on his naked flesh. Someone was coming toward him. A man whose mind had sensed his own. With this certainty came lesser impressions of speed, of confinement, of curiosity and fear. Rokanan opened his eyes, staring ahead as if he would see before him the face of that man whose being he had sensed. He was close. Rokanan was sure he was close and coming closer. But there was nothing to see but air and lowering clouds. A few dry, small flakes of snow whirled in the wind. To his left bulked the great boss of rock that blocked their way. Jahan had come out beside him and was watching him with a scared look, but he could not reassure Jahan, for that presence tugged at him, and he could not break the contact. "There is an airship," he muttered thickly like a sleep talker. "There." There was nothing where he pointed. Air, cloud. "There," Rokanan whispered. Jahan, looking again where he pointed, gave a cry. Mogian, on the gray steed, was riding the wind well out from the cliff, and beyond him, far out in a scud of cloud, a larger black shape had suddenly appeared, seeming to hover or to move very slowly. Mogian flashed on downwind without seeing it, his face turned to the mountain wall, looking for his companions, 2 tiny figures on a tiny ledge in the sweep of rock and cloud. The black shape grew larger, moving in, its veins clacking and hammering in the silence of the heights. Rokanan saw it less clearly than he sensed the man inside it, the uncomprehending touch of mind on mind, the intense defiant fear. He whispered to Jahan, "Take cover," but could not move himself. The helicopter nosed in unsteadily, rags of cloud catching in its whirring veins. Even as he watched it approach, Rokanan watched from inside it, not knowing what he looked for, seeing 2 small figures on the mountainside, afraid, afraid. A flash of light, a hot shock of pain, pain in his own flesh, intolerable. The mind contact was broken, blown clean away. He was himself, standing on the ledge, pressing his right hand against his chest and gasping, seeing the helicopter creep still closer, its veins whirring with a dry, loud rattle, its laser-mounted nose pointing at him. From the right, from the chasm of air and cloud, shot a gray winged beast ridden by a man who shouted in a voice like a high, triumphant laugh. 1 beat of the wide gray wings drove steed and rider forward, straight against the hovering machine. Full speed, head on, there was a tearing sound like the edge of a great scream. And then the air was empty. The 2 on the cliff crouched, staring. No sound came up from below. Clouds wreathed and drifted across the abyss.
"Mogian!"
Rokanan cried the name aloud. There was no answer. There was only pain and fear and silence.